First Baptist Church of Redmond, May 30th, 2021, Ecclesiastes Chapter 3, Seasons.
And join me in reading Ecclesiastes 3:1. There is an appointed time for everything, and there is a time for every matter under heaven. You may be seated.
The sermon is titled Seasons, based on Ecclesiastes 3. We'll spend a lot of time in verse 1, surprisingly, but discuss the other verses. Have you ever seen this? Ever seen one of these? I used to use such things at work. Before giving his life to Christ, author Lewis Smeads worked for his uncle's steel company. His testimony is follows. Gigantic cranes hoisted the steel beams from boat to dock by means of immense electromagnets, each of them about 3 feet thick, 8 feet in diameter, and weighing about 15 tons. The magnets hung at the end of a 2-inch cable, which was in turn controlled by an operator sitting in a cab above the docks. I was standing on the ground, blankly watching the theater of steel bustling about me when a shadow fell right on top of me, which seemed odd because there were no trees or buildings. I looked up and saw one of those immense magnets, 10 feet above me. Dock workers ducked in and under those magnets all day long without giving them a thought. But I did not feel safe with that monster hovering over me. So I took a long step away. At that instant, the magnet crashed to the earth and scraped the heel of my shoe as it landed. Rushing to investigate, the crane operator discovered that the cable holding the tons of magnetized steel above my head had been frayed. A few wires of steel were all that separated me from what was to happen. Later on, away from the docks, I wondered whether God himself could have pushed me away out of the way of that magnet just in time to save my neck and got my attention at the same time. It seemed absurd to wonder whether the maker of the universe would go to such extreme lengths to get my attention. But then again, I had been less than a tenth of a second away from being crushed to the thickness of the dime. And such things do not happen every day. Do you have any quotes about or phrases about time? A stitch in time saves nine, as an example. What are some other quotes? Time flies when you're having fun. Yep, that's turned about the clock. Time's fun when you're having flies. Yes, I'll do that when pigs fly. I'm going to spend a lot of time on the first phrases of Ecclesiastes 3, verse 1. There is an appointed time for everything. Solomon could have said a lot of things about time. He might have said that time is fleeting, that we are running out of time, and that once it is gone, it can never be recovered. These are all things that Solomon could have said, but he decided not to. Instead, he wrote a poem about the orderliness of every time that as God has ordained. It's important to notice that God has ordained. I think it's the world's most famous poem on the subject of time. Jeremiah 1:12, God says to the prophet, "You have seen well, for I am watching over my world to perform it, to perform those things." The verbs in Ecclesiastes 3, 1 through 8 are divine actions before they become human actions. God is sovereign over his world. It's important to see the completeness of what God does. The sovereign God who gives order to time is not one-dimensional. Every activity in this poem has its opposite. And together, both of them tell us what God is doing and does in this world. There is also something comprehensive about the list as a whole. There are 14 pairs of all, and which is twice the biblical number of seven, symbolically completion or perfection. I want you to notice, if you remember only one thing, there's two words for time in this verse. There is an appointed time for everything, and there is a time for every matter under heaven. It's exceptionally hard to translate with meaning this phrase. The first usage of time seems to indicate God's direction of time. It seems to be used for predestined events. So the first word is actually used in, I could find only three verses. Nehemiah 2:6, Esther 9:7, and Ecclesiastes 3:1. And it's used in venues, occasions, where God causes things to happen. It's predestinated. God chose a thing to happen. And all other usages of time, 296 in the Old Testament, the second word for time and every other word for time means the appointed time for something. Time is an event. Time as it happens. God is ultimately the king of time. Many people prefer a one-dimensional deity who exists like they do. They like to think of God giving life, but not appointing the time of death. Everything happens when it happens because God is sovereign over time as well as eternity. Furthermore, there is a definite orderliness to the way God does things. He is a precise God, absolute in his authority over time and space, and he puts everything in its own time and place. He is a precise God, absolute. This has been true from the very beginning of time, when God divided the days of creation. He's orderly, he's intentional, he has a purpose. We might not see the purpose, but he has a purpose for everything and for you. There is a time for him to kill, as well as a time for him to heal. In other words, a time for capital punishment, as well as for skilled medical care and the healing of a nation's soul. Most of us are not farmers. You cooperate with the seasons. It's the only way to grow a crop, to respect the seasons. You don't even prune a tree whenever you feel like it. Timing is everything when it comes to the field. A time to give birth and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build up. We don't like this part because it deals with ultimate realities. We read about the mafia and Samaritan's Purse in adjacent articles. A time to tear down is a perfect illustration of urban renewal. A time to weep and a time to dance. A time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance. As C.S. Lewis said, pain is God's megaphone. He whispers to us in our pleasure, but he shouts to us in our pain. Swindoll says, you can't stop preaching, but don't stop laughing. You can tell when mourning recovers to the point of joy. But it can take a long time sometimes. A time to throw stones and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace and a time to shun embracing. I take this to mean times of affirmation pushes up right next to times of confrontation. There are times when the same friend tells us, now, I can't agree with anything that you're doing. And yet, embraces us at the same time and encourages us not to quit. A time to search and a time to give up as lost. A time to keep and a time to throw away. Is it a case with human dramas? We've all seen stories in the news about a lost child, a lost elderly person, and they can't find them. Searches ultimately must be stopped. Versus the times when closets must be gone through and stuff taken to Goodwill, a time to keep and a time to throw away. I've been doing some, and I need to do more. A time to tear apart, and a time to sew it together. A time to be silent, and a time to speak. Don't you wish that someone invisible to you could be sent to say, please speak up when you should? Conversely, psst, be quiet, don't talk. More often than not, if you have to make a decision, we appear wiser when we say less. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. I'll be reading these sections because they were said by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Solzhenitsyn was asked, what hope is there for the West? His reply is to the right. What hope is there then for the West? The time when the West could save itself by its own exertions may have passed. To save itself would require a complete change in its attitudes, when in fact these attitudes are still going the wrong way. Instead of girding itself for struggle, the West is still hoping for outside forces to save it through some kind of miracle. Perhaps a miracle in the Kremlin. Solidarity was hailed as such a miracle, but the only miracle that the people of the West can pray for is a profound change in their own hearts. He added, when the following answer was given, do we have a single main underlying moral ill that one can identify? Besides cowardice, selfishness. We hear a constant clamor for rights. Rights, always rights. So little about responsibility. And it's interesting, we have forgotten God. The need now is for selflessness, for a spirit of sacrifice, for a willingness to put aside personal gains for the salvation of the whole Western world. What benefit is there for the worker from that which he labors? I have seen the task which God has given the sons of mankind with which to occupy themselves. There's two questions. One, what's the profit? Under the sun, I counted them, there's 86,400 seconds in a day. Wow. And there's zero in it for you. Because we should live our lives under the control of God. There's zero profit. Solomon said, zero profit in it for you if you leave God out of the equation. The second question is, what's the purpose? Universities have no answers. People are becoming more and more confused. You read the news stories. There are myriad upon myriad of choices that you have to make without moral guidance. Western society is becoming more and more aimless. Anything is possible, and anything is probable. For us, these seasons in which certain pursuits are proper are appointed by God. There is an appointed time for everything. If we know God, and if we make a decision to fear Him and obey Him, then the meaningless things mentioned earlier acquire meaning. Wisdom, knowledge, and even pleasure. Things Solomon sought become meaningful under God's direction, leadership, and timing. I'd like to not suggest that you do this, but it caused a stir. Shea Bradley loved laughter. In the end, he made sure to get the last laugh, or rather, made sure that he gave one last laugh. Friends and family mourning the loss of Bradley at his funeral, he died, were retreated to one final joke. A recording, remotely controlled, of Bradley yelling out in protest while his coffin was being lowered to the ground, "Let me out! It's dark in here!" He had recorded his own voice. And a now viral video of the event, mourners circling the gravesite, first stand still, in complete shock. Then, eventually, laughter fill the air as people realize what they're hearing. The recording closes with Bradley saying, "I just called to say goodbye." When Bradley got news of his terminal illness a year prior, he made secret arrangements with his children to make and play the recording as his last dying wish. 2 days before the funeral, they alerted their mother. It's smart to alert mother. and other immediate families so they wouldn't be too shocked. Bradley's daughter, Andrea, posted the video to Facebook along with a few thoughts and tribute. "To make us laugh when we all were incredibly sad, what a man." I don't suggest you play the video because the video complains profanity, making it inappropriate to view. But wow. He had the last laugh. He tried to rob the grave, but he couldn't do it. But at least he made levity. Was it an appropriate time? Well, he thought it was. But there's an appropriate time for the events of this life. That's why I tell young people that they're living in the most dangerous era from the ages of 15 to 25, because you'll make most of your life decisions in these years. Where are we going to go to school? What do you choose for a career? Where will you live? Will you live at home or move? If you move, where to? You usually often get married in this window. I have sympathy because I lived through it, and I didn't get married until 26. And so I passed the window. Barbara was smack dab in the middle of the window. Young people, older people, elderly people, you have to decide what to do, when to do it, and it's impossible to make an adequate decision, even a good decision, without God's advice. God's perspective, that's what wisdom is defined at, God's view of life, is important, even critical, because God has something to say about most everything. What do you do?